Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, today we're talking about outperforming the competition even during these tough times. Coming up around 12:30, we'll talk with top sports psychologist Dr. Jason Selk, who works with some of the world's most winning athletes and innovative business leaders. We're going to end today's show with a rep from a branch manager from the Robert Half Company. It's an employment agency, and they came out with a very interesting new survey that I thought would be fun to share with you. And talking of innovative business leaders, as I was a moment ago, my first guest is right up there. He completed his executive education at Harvard School of Business and MIT. He was named one of Minnesota's top business leaders under 40. He's built a company that has won the best place to work no less than 7 times. And he's a 2-time Inc. 500 winner and I believe a 1-time 5,000 winner. And he's the author of Building a Winning Business, 70 Takeaways for Creating a Company That Will Remain Strong During Good and Bad Economic Times. And these same takeaways helped my guest, Tom Selanek, grow his company from a $2 million business in 2001 to a $10 million firm by 2011. Tom Selanek, welcome.
Selanek.
I asked you how to pronounce your name, and then I do it wrong. Tom Selanek, welcome.
Well, it's good to be here. However you pronounce my last name, it's good to be here. Thank you.
Like me, your answer to anything, right? So let's just begin with a little bit of background on you, Tom. I read a quote by you in an article that said, people sometimes ask you if you were born with a silver spoon in your mouth, and you say, no, I was born with a pitchfork in my hand.
Exactly. I am the son of a dairy farmer, and growing up on the farm, people ask me, you know, when did I start to work? And at least on my dad's farm, we started working around the same time that we were able to walk, so early on, I learned the value of hard work and the benefits of putting in long days. And after I finished with high school, I went on to do undergraduate work at a local university and get a BA and a mix of computer science and business. And then I went on and did part of a graduate degree at the Carlson School of Business at the University of Minnesota. And I've also done the executive education that you mentioned thus far. Upon graduating, I had a job for about a year and a half, and I had the good fortune of having a bad manager. So I think if my manager was fantastic and gave me praise and didn't point out my faults in front of others and kind of do all the opposite stuff I talk about in my book, I very well could be working for someone else today. But a year and a half out of school, I left my job to start what is today Intertech.
And good for you that you didn't just stay there and quit in that company with the bad boss, because that's what happens to a lot of people. They stay and quit. So why technology? Your internet, Intertech, is a technology training company, as I understand. Why did you choose that path?
You know, that's a great question. When I was going to school at the local University of St. Thomas, as I mentioned, I went in not really sure about what I wanted to do. You know, I'd been exposed growing up to farming and a lot of the trades, like being an electrician or being a construction worker, so I didn't really know. But when I had my second semester, my freshman year, I had a computer science teacher of all classes you think maybe couldn't be fun and exciting. He really did engage me, and I found out that I had a knack for it. And so it was thanks to a college professor who got me excited about it. And you know, growing up, I wasn't the smartest kid in my class, and I wasn't the best athlete. But when it came to this, I felt like I really had something, you know, a gift that I'd maybe seen other people have in other areas.
Right, right. And so you've grown this. I mean, you've won a lot of awards. Just, I think, having it being recognized 7 times as one of the best places to work must feel like a great accomplishment to you as the founder of the organization.
It is. It is. The thing I love about that survey is it's done by an outside research firm. And I think, you know, if you ask your employees, you know, how are we doing?
Right.
Most of them are going to think, is my answer going to have an impact on my raise this coming review period? But the great thing about the Best Places to Work Award is it's anonymous, it's a third party, and it's pretty competitive. You know, they've shared over the different banquets that we've gone to how many firms are out there competing for this, and it wouldn't be possible without great employees and a great leadership team and customers that support us. So I thank all of them for making that possible.
Right. And I want to share this with our listeners because I think it's important to, show that when you're writing 70 key takeaways here, you really know what you're talking about. You've lived these and experienced them and pulled together the best of what you've known to grow your company from 2 million to 10 million. So, go ahead.
Well, I also know what not to do with those things I didn't put in the book. Because I tried them and they didn't work.
Right. It'd probably be a much bigger book as well.
You're right, Becky. It'd be huge.
So what's a typical day like for you, Tom? Is there such a thing as a typical day?
You know, there isn't, and that is really what I love about my job. It can be Mondays tend to be more internal meetings, me meeting with the folks that oversee sales for the different divisions or being involved on conference calls with our consultants that are out working in the field. But beyond that, it really is a mix. We have an outside board of advisors and outside legal and finance. And my role is really kind of a coach and a conduit between these different people in our organization. And I think if I had 2 days or 3 days that were spot on identical, I'd be pretty surprised. And mm-hmm. something that's been good, and I think it ties back to the book, is because of this series of systems that outline, like our meeting schedules and approach to strategic planning, I can honestly say that this year, we have never been more busy in terms of dollar volume, and my life has never been more sane than it is right now.
Isn't that interesting? Interesting. What do you accredit that to?
First and foremost, having great people. I know that when I interview folks, and I ask who else they're talking to, they'll share some firm names. And, one thing I can tell them is we hire 1 out of every 20 people that apply for a job. So we're extremely selective in who we bring in the door. And then we back that up with training, whether it's sales or leadership or technical training. And we believe that even if we didn't hire another body over the course of a year, as an organization, through continuous learning, we should be stronger at the end of the year than what we were at the start of the year. So first would be having solid people who are going to demand more of themselves than I could ever ask. And second would be having these consistent systems that, one, make us really aware of how our business is doing, and two, through these things like daily huddles I talk about in the book, where mm-hmm. we're doing a stand-up meeting for 15 minutes at the end of every day, it really keeps us connected as a team.
I love that stand-up huddle idea because I think so many meetings are such a waste of time and people get comfy in their chairs and they don't want to leave. And you literally do a stand-up huddle, as you call it, right?
We do, yes. So it's usually a pretty quick once around the horn, and there aren't people that are falling asleep and there aren't people that are talking too long because the stand-up nature of it makes us want to just talk about the big rocks and move on.
Right. Now, in the book, you've mentioned on the show already several times how important people are, the good, having good people around you. Has somebody in particular inspired you in your leadership style along the way?
In the book, I dedicate it to my father, and I think that he was really just a really authentic person. You didn't have to wonder what he was saying, and it wasn't that he was abrasive. It was that he said it like it is, and he was not as concerned about spin, whether that was good or bad. So that, being a genuine person, I learned a lot from him there, as well as creating an environment where people know it's okay to screw up. And when I do my orientation with folks, a story I love to tell them is when I was between semesters at St. Thomas, it was the winter, and I'd come back to the farm to do some work, and I was out in a woods pulling a big tree out with a truck. I keep revving the engine, and this tree is not moving. It's a fallen tree. It's a log chain onto the truck. And I keep accelerating, and finally I hear a loud snapping and pin sound. What happened is I'd sheared the axle because I had the parking brake on. So I'm walking back through the snow, imagining what my father's going to do, and I'm thinking, he is going to kill me. And so I told him what happened, and he said, well, if he didn't do anything, he wouldn't make any mistakes. So let's go take a look at the truck. And here at Intertech, you know, as long as people have the intention of the company in mind when they're making actions and doing things, I've let them know we're going to screw up in the course of getting stuff done. So being authentic, having an environment where people can screw up and it's okay. And lastly, hard work. It's hard to, when you've got people that are smart with a good intention and they're willing to work hard, it's hard to beat a team that has those components.
Right, right. Good. Well, the book is broken up into several segments: hiring, managing, strategy, vendors, projects, and leading. And when we come back, we're going to take a quick break. I wanted to focus on leading, because I think everything really starts with self-leadership. And it's actually one of the largest segments in the book, I think, here. Yeah, it is. So we're going to talk some more about that when we come back. My guest in this segment is Tom Salonik. His book is called Building a Winning Business, 70 Takeaways. We'll also share some downloadable templates that he has available for you, too. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
If you want to reach a large audience of like-minded people, people with integrity, people who strive to live well and live strong, let Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair shine a spotlight on your message. Tell us about your business, product, service, or event, and we'll help you craft your message and promote your good work. Email Vicky at conversationslive.net or call 425-269-4772. That's 425-269-4772.
Ernest Hemingway once said, "Wine is the most civilized thing in the world." Benjamin Franklin wrote that wine makes daily living easier, less hurried, with fewer tensions and more tolerance. Join Vicky next week for a conversation with Natalie MacLean, sommelier and award-winning wine journalist, about her adventures around the globe to find the perfect glass of vino. Tune in Monday at noon Pacific to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And follow her on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Independent programs, independent voices, independent ideas. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. We are talking in this segment with Tom Salonik. He's the author of Building a Winning Business, 70 Takeaways. And as we said in the beginning of the show, he's built his company in the last 10 years, from taking it from $2 million to $10 million. And these takeaways are really great advice. And the thing I love about this, Tom, is that this isn't a book somebody has to sit down and read from start to finish. They can just pick up and say, what kind of takeaway do I want today? and pull it. And it's all in sound bites. It's in bullets and sound bites. And in this busy world, I think that was a great way to present this. So I wanted to talk in this segment about the leadership segment you have in the book, because I think there's a huge difference between a leader and a manager. And you have some great tips here. And I want to start off, first of all, with a SWOT analysis. You say this is really important. And I know so many companies who do this SWOT analysis. And I'll have you explain that in a moment, if you would. But then they make, you know, they'll plan maybe a day retreat to get this done. And then nothing happens with it. So tell us a little bit about why this, you think the SWOT analysis is important, what it is, and how you keep it moving in your company.
Sure, sure. So a SWOT analysis is where you take a look at your company's strengths, weaknesses, and then out in the market, opportunities and threats. And you're spot on, Vicki, that if there's just a lot of talk and not a lot of follow-through, you can feel like you've wasted time. What we do as an organization is once a year, we have all the employees meet without the leadership team or any partners there, and they talk about stuff related to our business and our marketplace. And I think if you put it out there just as what are our strengths, what are our opportunities, what are our threats, it gets people thinking in too linear of a fashion. And so we'll ask questions like, if you were the CEO for one day, what's the first thing you'd change? What's a topic that is uncomfortable that we're sweeping underneath the carpet because it's hard to talk about? What's one thing that we should continue doing, one thing that we should stop doing, and one thing that we should start doing as an organization? So we take those buckets of strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats and get feedback from people, but not by asking flat out those questions. For the leadership team, before we do a two-day facilitated offsite, we just finished ours last week, we do quite a bit of pre-work before we get down there, and all of the members of the leadership team fill out a pretty exhaustive survey that has similar questions to the ones I just outlined, but additional things like, you know, what are those attributes of our people that if we don't get these kind of people, we're going to be out of business? What's out in the marketplace that could put us out of business? So again, the results are the same answers, but mm-hmm. Because we're asking the questions in a different manner, we find that we're getting people not thinking in that linear SWOT fashion.
Right, much more interactive, and you're much, as you said, much more likely to get honest and authentic and different perspectives. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And then to your point about making sure that it gets done, when we do our 2-day planning meeting, we're looking for what are the top three goals that we need for the training side of our business and the top three goals that we're going to have for the consulting side of our business, using that SWOT information as input. And then we assign one person per goal to say, I'm the champion. I am responsible for getting this done. Now, it doesn't mean just me doing the work, but I am the one that will be held accountable to it. And then once a month, we have an all-company meeting. And at that all-company meeting, we have each champion of a goal give an update about where they're at. And that creates visibility and that creates accountability because you don't want to show up 12 times in a row and say, I know I talked about it, but I haven't gotten anything done.
Right, right. And that's a good segue into setting goals as a leader because you do not, you say just set 2 to 3 goals and not the 23 that, you know, I had on my list last year because you can't possibly accomplish everything. So I thought that was a key point there. I wanted to look at what leaders do, which may sound obvious to people, but with your experience, you believe, you say that there are a top 7 responsibilities, planning the organizational goals, aligning individuals with the goals of the firm, solving problems, delegating, giving praise, giving corrective feedback, and treating people with care. So let's go back and talk about people again, because this is prevalent throughout your book, the importance of hiring good people, keeping them interested, keeping them satisfied, giving them interesting projects. What are some of the tips what are some of the things you look for when you're hiring good people?
That's a great question as well. We're big believers. There's a book out there called Top Grading, and it outlines an approach the way that you do the interview. One key question we ask people is, how many people did the job that you did, that you're doing today, or that you did in the past in your previous organizations? And they'll say, well, there were 8 of the people that were salespeople. And then we'll say, who was your manager? Sally. Can we talk to Sally? And what we look for there is, yes, you know, outside of their current job, they should be really referenceable. Second, we'll say, and this is what we call the threat of a reference check, when we talk to Sally, how will she stack rank you against the other peers that you had? And we're looking for people that are going to say, I was the top person or I was the second to top person, and they're going to have a good reason why they're the second to top person, because it'll be something like, I've been there for 10 years, but the person that's the top person has been there selling for 18 years. So we look for top performance in all of their last jobs. We look for people that are going to say, yes, you can talk to my previous manager, the one before that, the one before that. Something else that we do, and I talk about this in the book, is people are hired for skill and fired for personality. And so we give people a personality assessment where we are lining up how they're wired to the gold standard of our firm. So we take our top people and say, complete this assessment. Out of that assessment, we create a benchmark, and anybody else that is looking to apply with us, we compare them against our benchmark. So we can know from a psychological perspective how they're wired. We're looking for somebody who fits our firm. And then last, we look for consistency throughout the interview process. So when somebody says, I was paid $135,000 last year, that will be their answer every time we ask them. Mm-hmm. When people are kind of all over the boards, you know, we think they're probably making it up, and they probably are kind of making it up.
Right. Good advice. And I think one of the things you talk about then, once you've got those good people in, is because it doesn't matter if you have, you know, just a one person office or you've got 1,000 people in, the people you surround yourself with is key. You say leaders provide tools and incentives to help employees deliver on goals and they expect results. So talk from a leadership perspective on, you know, expecting results and providing tools and incentives, if you would.
Sure. As far as results go, we use the Dale Carnegie approach to management, which is a forward-looking tool versus a review, I think is a horrible way to evaluate people because we're talking about stuff that we can never change. So that means up front, like with a salesperson, we're going to say, we are both agreeing that the definition of success for you is you will sell $1.5 million over the course of the next year. It'll be broken down by this much per month. And we're going to back that up with a half-hour one-on-one meeting where we're talking about how you're doing on this goal. When it comes to tools and techniques, and this also ties back to the Dale Carnegie key results area approach, we outline in there when people are defining what their goals are going to be for the next year, what are tools or resources that we need to give you, could be training, to be successful. Sometimes as a leader, especially if there's a lot of moving parts, we could be asking people to do stuff, and they're like, geez, I've never been trained in this, or you're asking me to do something, and I don't even have the software on my machine to do it. So along with having a clear, objective measurement of performance, we also allow people to say, I'm more than happy to do this, but I'm going to need this software or this training, or I need a mentor. So it allows people to raise their hand on the front end of it to say, you know, either from a goal perspective, that, Tom, this expectation for me is way out of whack. There's no way I can do $1.5 million. At least we're talking on the front end of the year about that versus a review when it's all said and done. Also, by allowing people to bullet out what they need or want, it allows someone to say it at the front of a year, here's what I need, so at the end of the year, you're going to be happy with the results I delivered.
Makes much more sense to me.
Yes, reviews can be frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely, much more sense. And I know you believe in letting the sun shine on others and, you know, giving positive feedback and even critical feedback, which, of course, is crucial. Final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today, Tom?
Well, you know, as it relates to life or my book, and I talk about this in section number 50, you know, I think, therefore I am. And this isn't Pollyanna. I mean, if we want to have a life that's filled with good stuff, a good way to make that happen is to know what that is that we want and then to think about it, then act on it.
Perfect. Great book. And I thank you for being with us today, Tom. I know you're really busy. What is the best website for people to reach you? You've got a couple of different websites, I think.
You bet. They can reach me at www.tomsalonek.com. Or they can go to the corporate website, which is intertech.com.
Okay, which is the one where there are more than 20 downloadable templates and checklists, which I think a lot of people would find really helpful at work or in their business. Where can they find that? Those?
That's at the intertech.com/winning-business. And to be able to get those downloads, they just need to enter the first three digits from the ISBN, and those digits are 978. So there's a spot on the website where it says enter the code to get the downloads, and for you and your audience, 978 is the number to use.
Okay, super. Thank you so much for being with us today,
right,
Tom.
Thank you, Vicki.
Really
right,
appreciate
goodbye.
It. Bye-bye. And my guest again, Tom Szalonak, his book, Building a Winning Business, 70 Takeaways. Great book. And please do stay with us when we come back. We'll be joined by sports psychologist Dr. Jason Salk, who works with some of the world's most winning athletes and innovative business leaders. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
There's nothing else like it on the dial. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, we are talking today about outperforming the competition. And my next guest is Dr. Jason Salk. He works with some of the world's finest athletes, coaches, and business leaders to help them outperform their competition. Over the last 10 years, Dr. Salk has established himself as one of the top sports psychologists in the country. In 2006, he served as the director of sports psychology for the St. Louis Cardinals and helped the team win their first World Series in over 20 years. Jason Salk is a regular contributor to some of the major networks on TV and radio. He's been featured in Muscle and Fitness and Shape and several other magazines. And he's the author of the 10-Minute Toughness. He's joining us today to talk about his new book, Executive Toughness, the Mental Training Program to Increase Your Leadership Performance. Dr. Jason Salk, welcome.
Thank you, Vicki. Great to be with you.
Well, you've created some amazing accomplishments over the past 10 years, and yet I read that when you were a kid, you did just enough to get by.
I didn't think you were going to talk about that dirty little secret on the air, Vicki.
So come on, tell us about this.
Well, it's the truth, and when I was younger, probably even up to the age of 20, I'm somewhat embarrassed to say I was a complete underachiever. You know, I did just barely enough to make the grade or make the team, but would never do what it took to achieve greatness. But the good thing is I always knew I wanted to achieve greatness, and then I had some mentors. Coach John Wooden was one of my mentors, and he was really the first one outside of my parents that woke me up to the idea that if I wanted to be great, I was going to have to act like it.
Mm. And Coach Wooden, his trademark, you said, was two sets of threes. Can you share that with us?
Absolutely. And the one that really got my attention was don't whine, don't complain, don't make excuses. And it was the don't make excuses that I think really was one of the major changes in my life. I was the person who, when I did come up short on things, I would blame it on the coach or blame it on the teacher or blame it on the weather or blame it on the fact that I didn't feel well. But it was never my fault. You know, and I write in my second book, actually I wrote this in both books, that excuses are the antithesis of achievement. What I mean by that is, if you are the person who will use excuses, and the majority of us do, then every time you use an excuse, you've just reinforced the current behavior, and you've eliminated or dramatically decreased the chance that you'll actually make changes. You know, it's everything from giving your wife an excuse for coming home late to giving a client an excuse for not delivering. You know, every time you do it, you put yourself in a position where you probably just reinforce that negative behavior.
Right, right. And his other set of three was never lie, never cheat, never steal. You say that he was, John Wooden, Coach John Wooden, was integral in you actually writing this book. He inspired you to write the book.
Yeah, you know, he was a mentor of mine, and around the age of 20, I started reading everything that he was writing, which is a lot. You know, Coach Wooden was a best-selling author 25 times over. In fact, in his 90s, he wrote more best-selling books than most authors write in their entire lives. I know, I'm an amazing man. Wow. And those of you who don't know, you know, Coach Wooden literally was known more for his leadership off the court than he was on the court. But anyway, I read everything that he wrote, and then 10 weeks before he died, which was last year, I had the opportunity to go spend some time with him. And when I went to his house, and luckily I was able to spend probably 4 or 5, 6 hours really just kind of one-on-one time. And after meeting with him, I realized, okay, I'm going to write a second book, and I'm going to do it the right way. I'm going to make sure that this second one is done with the fundamentals in mind and keep it simple, but make sure that if people will follow the plan I put together in the second book, there's no doubt they will be able to accomplish a lot more in terms of their health, happiness, and success than without the fundamentals. In fact, if you follow the plan, it's just almost impossible not to improve, not to move yourself forward. Just kind of like with Wooden. If you followed his plan on the court or off the court, you couldn't help but be better. Right. And he did it in a way that people could digest. You know, I'm not trying to impress anyone with how intelligent I am. I just really am so passionate about helping people improve in their lives.
Right. So I know that, first of all, I want to ask you a question that I've always really wondered, and that is how sports psychologists work with athletes. Do you do it on a one-on-one basis? Do they lay on a couch? Do you go out on the field with them? How does it work?
It's a great question. And I think I do things a little bit differently. I'm somewhat unique. The way it works for me, at least with the Cardinals, and I'm still working as director of mental training for the St. Louis Cardinals, I go down to spring training, and I work with a group of people. And what I did, I think what's unique, is I developed a mental training plan. I'm not a pep talk guy. I'm not a guy that basically will tell you to go do all this work and you're going to get all these results, but you got to figure out what the work is. What I really try to do is create a comprehensive and concrete mental training plan so that for the athlete, and that was my first book, 10-Minute Toughness, if you follow the plan, and there were three phases in that plan, there would just absolutely be no doubt that you would be more mentally prepared than the competition. And it, you know, everything I do is 100% science-based, and the good news is it really just does produce results. And then because I was having a lot of success in 2006 with the Cardinals winning their first World Series, a lot of business people started asking me to come teach the plan. Well, it wasn't the same for business people as it was for athletes. And so that's why I had to come up with a new plan, Executive Toughness, and that's 10 mental toughness fundamentals. But again, if you will follow those fundamentals, you'll put yourself in business and in life that you cannot help but develop your mental toughness and improve.
Right.
And so to answer the question, a lot of the work that I do is I'll get groups of people together and teach the tools, teach the plan, if you will. And then after that, people who want additional or individual help, then I'll go one-on-one with them and make sure that they specifically know how to tailor the plan for them. And obviously I'll do some pushing and making sure that there's accountability and improving and reaching higher and higher levels.
Mm. Now, the title of your book is Executive Toughness. And, you know, a lot of people might say we're in the mess we are economically because of some executive decisions. So define for us, for the purposes of the book, what you mean by executive toughness.
Well, and the whole idea, and, you know, it's not, the book Executive Toughness is not just for a person who's an executive. It really is for an executive, anyone wanting to be an executive. Or, to be honest with you, the tools in this second book are the tools I would use for any individual who came into my office, whether it be trying to lose weight, trying to stop smoking, any personal issues as well. And I know it sounds like a catch-all, but the truth of the matter is, you know, going back to Coach John Wooden, I just have identified the fundamentals from the fields of sports psychology and performance psychology, that if you will use these fundamentals, and again, there are only 10 of them, if you'll put them into action, you cannot help but improve. You know, again, whether it's trying to stop smoking, trying to make more money, trying to improve your personal relationships, whatever it is, you fill in the details, I'll give you the plan, and it'll put you in a position where you will be moving in the right direction.
Okay, sounds good. I want to talk about accountability, Jason. You talk about four levels of accountability. I wonder if you'd run through those quickly with us.
Absolutely. And I know it sounds a little bit inverted, but the first one is individual. You know, and the first level of accountability is you have to start to think to yourself, I want to make some change. I want to do something differently. And then what we want to do is move that from individual out to your peers. Once we go to your peers, meaning all you do is you go public with it. So let's say I have a decision that I want to make more money. I make that decision internally, and then I take it to the next level, which is I share it with someone. It could be someone at work. It could be my wife. The third level is going to a mentor or a coach. And what that could be is, you know, telling my boss, hey, boss, I want to make more money. Or telling my coach, coach, I want to do better on the team. I want to take on more of a leadership role. And then the fourth level is when you go public, meaning all the way out so that anyone who wants to hear it can hear it. Mm-hmm. You know, an example of that could be the athlete talking to the media. It could be the employee who sends the internal office memo. It could be the boss who has the conversation out loud at the national sales meeting. But once you achieve all four of those levels, you put yourself in sort of a contract position where it becomes more and more difficult to not be accountable.
Right. You say there are two ways to approach life, PCT, problem-centric thought, and RSF, relentless solution focus. And you believe there is an answer or a solution to every single problem. I wonder if you'd talk about those two approaches, please.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I think, Vicki, you right there hit the nail on the head. PCT is the number one obstacle for most people. And again, PCT is problem-centric thought. It's your mind's tendency. And I want to emphasize this point. We're all built the same way, that mentally we have a tendency to focus on problems. And the key is we need to shift that tendency to something I call RSF, the relentless solution focus. If you can keep your mind's eye focused on solutions, then there's this other thing called expectancy theory. Expectancy theory states that which you focus on expands. I'm going to say it again. That which you focus on expands. And so if you think of it this way, the normal human being, our brains are built in a way that it's normal for us to focus on our problems. But because of expectancy theory, the more we focus on, the more we think about or talk about our problems, the more problems we're going to have. And that's where you have that negative cycle of where people just can't get out of the rut they're in. And I think a lot of people are in that boat, as opposed to what I've found the most mentally tough people actually do is they train their minds that in the face of adversity or when they want to think about a problem, instead, within 60 seconds, and that's part of the key, is you got to do it quickly. Within 60 seconds, you shift your thought process to what is the solution to the problem I'm facing. And you made a very big distinction there that I believe every problem has a solution. And we kind of cheated a little bit. We call it the plus one concept, plus one meaning any improvement whatsoever is considered a solution. You know, and that's the thing is, kind of like climbing a mountain, a lot of times what people have is they feel so overwhelmed they have so many problems, so many things to do that it feels like a mountain. And they look at the mountain and they think, oh, there's no way I can get all this done. Can you believe how much I have to do? And what happens, it really paralyzes us. And I call it being overwhelmed by the mountain, that in those situations, oftentimes, we don't do anything because we're overwhelmed. And so the solution is, just like climbing any mountain, just start taking one step at a time. Get one step done. Get five steps done. Before you know it, you'll have 15, 20, 30 steps done. Inertia starts to be positive for us there. You know, once we get ourselves in motion, we start to chip away at it. And then we become empowered. We take control. And that's such an important piece. And that RSF, that relentless solution focus, is control. That's the piece that so many people live their lives feeling like they're not in control of their life because PCT is so overwhelming for them.
Yeah, and I read in the book that that it's actually scientific proof that you learn to focus.
Absolutely.
You know, so many people, myself included, sometimes say, I just can't focus, but we have to learn to focus.
Yeah, and you know what's surprising is most people don't realize that. I mean, I think we, because you can't see the mental toughness or the mental focus, mm-hmm. that it must be something that was either given to you at birth or you just don't have it. And that's just not true. It's just like with your bicep. You know, your brain is just like your bicep. If you go to the weight room on a regular basis and you exercise your bicep, you cannot help but have that bicep become bigger and stronger. Same thing with your brain. The problem is there just haven't historically been a lot of people that give us the right exercises. You know, and I hope this is my contribution to the field of sports psychology and performance psychology is I think I've done a fairly good job of coming up with a simple, fundamental plan, the exercises, if you will, for the mind that will undoubtedly develop that focus you're talking about.
Right. And so many of us let fear stop us even trying. And the whole emphasis here is to de-emphasize winning and losing, success or failure, and focus on effort and process.
Absolutely. You know, and that's such a John Wooden concept right there, is he was a coach who literally knew more about winning than any coach to ever walk the face of the earth. And he never used the word winning with his players.
Isn't that interesting?
Absolutely. And you have to realize, too, that it's not a soft approach. It's not like, let's just say we've tried our best, even if we fail. I don't believe in that at all. If I did, I would have lost my job a long time ago. And so the key is to really identify, what does your best effort look like? You know, and how many people do you know, Vicki, that have literally taken a piece of paper out and written down, this is what my best effort looks like, and it's defined in the daily activities that they need to do. You know, that's one of the things I really try to push is, in the first fundamentals of the book, is identify what are called your process goals, the 9 goals on a daily basis that you need to do in your personal and professional life, that if you do those goals, those activities, that you cannot help but start moving yourself towards the product goal or the result goal, that the winning or the losing. And it really works. You know, it's somewhat counterintuitive, but people who buy into this realize not only is it a more enjoyable way to live life because you don't experience tremendous pressure, but it's such a better way to control for success. Mm. Absolutely proven and works.
Mm. We're running out of time here. I've got so many questions I want to ask you. The two most impressive women, who do you think are the two most impressive women that practice mental toughness?
Well, certainly I'd be a fool not to mention my mother. My mother is a policymaker with the elderly. She's done just unbelievable work in terms of advocating for Alzheimer's. And probably the second strongest person I've come across is Maxine Clark, the owner and CEO of Build-A-Bear. She is just an amazing woman. And, you know, one of the things that has impressed me so much about Maxine is at a young age, she knew she wanted to do something special. And she went into the male-dominated retail segment of corporate America and absolutely dominated, and then decided that she wanted to go do something for herself. And that's where she started with Build-A-Bear. And she just really was very, very clear on her purpose and refused to get off track from that purpose. And I just think it takes so much mental toughness to stay focused on the things that you really find important in life. And, and both those women have done nothing but impress me. And I could, the list goes on and on and on that one.
Right. And you actually share more of that story, Build-A-Bear, in your book with Maxine Clark. I know you have a great video on YouTube. It's on your website, too. You talk about the 100-second mental workout, and if we practice this, we simply cannot fail. So let's end today's segment with your thoughts on this 100-second mental workout.
Well, it's really that was probably my claim to fame and what propelled me to success in the sports psychology world. Now, for the athletes, it's 3 minutes and 40 seconds. And what I found for business people and people who are just trying to improve in life, we don't need that much time. We really can boil it down to 100 seconds. And I'm just a big believer in the bare minimum necessary for greatness. And so everything I do, I'm trying to trim down to what is that bare minimum that if you do it, you cannot help but experience greatness. And if you'll take 100 seconds a day and mentally prepare for the next day, what you will find is that next day will go so much more the way you want it to go. It's unbelievable. Science totally backs it up, and everybody tells me, wow, it really does work. And that's the thing is, if you'll put the 100 seconds into it, you'll see, too, it really will work for you. But you have to put the work in. I guess that's the bad news. But if you do, the good news is you can guarantee you will move yourself in the right direction on a daily basis.
Okay, and where can people find out more about you and your amazing work, Jason?
Well, thank you for that compliment there. The books, both of my books are across bookstores across the country. It's McGraw-Hill Books, so you can find that anywhere. You can also find more information about me on my website, and the book's on there, and there are all kinds of videos on there and supplemental materials for the book as well, and that website is jasonselk.com, jasonselk, S-E-L-K.com.
Thanks for being with us, Jason. Really appreciate it.
Vicki, all the best. Thanks for having me.
And the book again, Executive Toughness, the Mental Training Program to Increase Your Leadership Performance by Dr. Jason Selk. Please do stay with us. When we come back, we'll be joined by Sarah Eady, who's going to share a survey with us recently done by the Robert Half Company. Listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
If you want to reach a large audience of like-minded people, people with integrity, people who strive to live well and live strong, let Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair shine a spotlight on your message. Tell us about your business, product, service, or event, and we'll help you craft your message and promote your good work. Email Vicki at conversationslive.net or call 425-269-4772. That's 425-269-4772.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
Don't forget, this is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. We're in the last segment of today's show, and I'm joined by Sarah Idy. She's the Seattle branch manager at Robert Half. And we're going to talk about a survey, which I saw an article in the Business Examiner last week, and thought this was kind of interesting and fitted very well with today's segment. So we managed to make some time for it. And I thank you, Sarah, for jumping in with us today. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about why Robert Half initiated this survey. They hired a bunch of researchers to look at what?
Absolutely. You know, the survey was developed by Robert Half, and it was conducted by an independent research firm. And the survey is based on interviews with more than 430 workers, ages 18 years and up, who are employed in office environments. And we just thought that it was a great thing to take a look at right now with the state of employment right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the whole essence of this really is the importance of office etiquette, which,
yeah,
you know, sometimes I wonder if it's just disappeared.
Absolutely.
and the survey shares some of the wackiest workplace blunders. But I read that nearly half, or 48% of workers that were interviewed in this survey said that being courteous to others can help an employee rise through the ranks. And my first guest echoed something that I've always believed, that people are hired for their skills and fired for their personality, or promoted because of their interpersonal skills.
Absolutely. Well put.
So another 41% said etiquette plays at least some role in career advancement. So tell me what Robert Half is taking away from this survey.
You know, what we're taking away right now is just that definitely being courteous, being respectful, it goes a long way, both in your career advancement as well as your professional reputation. We all have etiquette blunders here and there, some smaller, some larger. But, you know, all in all, it's definitely, you know, it's okay to have a minor slip-up once in a while as long as it's not a regular occurrence. And, you know, having a good sense of humor and also admitting to your mistake quickly can definitely help you recover from it. And so, you know, when we took a look at this, you know, we were asked, are people ruder in the office today? And, you know, people are definitely moving at a faster pace, so it's a lot easier to make etiquette mistakes in the office. And unfortunately, sometimes with clients and customers. And this also goes along with, you know, because we're so, we use so many different technology tools in the workplace, it also makes it easier for slip-ups to occur,
mm-hmm,
as in, you know, email. I think a lot of times, you know, tone in emails gets missed.
Yeah, we have to remember how the other person might read it, even if we didn't intend it that way.
Absolutely.
So that's so important.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Robert Half offers four tips on avoiding some of the most common etiquette offenses. The first one, and these are pretty common sense, and you'd think you wouldn't have to say them, but apparently we do, based on the survey from employees. Keep it PG rated.
Absolutely.
Don't air grievances publicly. Take a breather. It's important to collect our thoughts. I'm going to share some of the faux pas in a minute.
Oh, please.
And put the tweezers away.
Yes.
And that, because some people do personal stuff at their desk that they probably shouldn't be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you shared some of the worst and wackiest etiquette blunders. An employee throws all the papers she's holding into the air. She storms out. I actually worked with someone who ran down the corridor ripping the wallpaper off the walls once.
Oh,
she
goodness.
Freaked off. A co-worker fell asleep at her desk. I worked with somebody who got fired because she fell asleep at her desk. So these are more common probably than we think.
Yeah.
Was there one here that particularly amazed you, shocked you?
You know, I think the one that I think happens probably more often than we know is, you know, when we think we're putting someone on hold and then, you know, either need to vent or unfortunately sometimes use inappropriate language within earshot,
right,
and yet then we find that we're not on hold.
Right.
And I'm sure some of us have been the recipient on the other end of that as well.
Right.
But it happens.
I think we've had a couple of presidents guilty of that.
Yes,
too, with
I
microphones.
Think so. I think so.
Well, you know what, Sarah, we're right at the end of our show, and I really appreciate you being with us today. To let our listeners know where they can find out more about this and also about the great handout you've got on technical etiquette, too.
Definitely, definitely. So you can go online to roberthalf.com, as well as we have, well, actually, it'd be www.roberthalf.us/business-etiquette, and it's the Robert Half's Comprehensive Guide, Business Etiquette, the New Rules in a Digital Age.
Thank you so much for being with us. I
sure.
really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that was Sarah Ide there. She's the Seattle branch manager of the Robert Half branch, and they are the world's first and largest specialized staffing firm. So if you're looking for a job, check them out, roberthalf.com. Thank you so much for being with us today. We really are right at the end of our show, and I have to rush off here. Hope you all had a great Thanksgiving, and we'll be back next week talking about wine. So please do join us next week.